Hi, I'm Nancy Velarde. I am the current president of PCTA, but I was an English teacher, 10th grade English teacher, for about 25 years. Started out in New York, but most of my time was here in Pinellas. I am sticking to my union because I believe everybody deserves a voice at the table. And the union is a way for teachers to have a say in what their day looks like and what the children receive. I will always stick to the union.
Welcome back to PCTA's Fire Podcast. As always, I am Brennan Pickett. I am the Fire Co-Chair and FEA Director.
I am Philip Bel Castro, Fire Co-Chair and PCTA Director at Large.
I am Ramzi Aziz. I teach AP Psychology, AP European History, Anthropology Honors, and Humanities Honors.
And I'm Mike Gandolfo. I'm the former president of PCTA, former executive director of PCTA. I'm the current executive board member serving on the executive board here at PCTA.
And we're really excited to have Mike on. He was my first president, actually, when I'm thinking of union presidents in the PCTA. So I do have fond memories of him coming to my school and kind of giving me the who's who and the what's up. So today we're coming together to talk about a very special thing for our members and why unions are so important. And that idea is collective bargaining and why we do it. So, well, what is collective bargaining? Mike, you have a lot of experience with collective bargaining. Can you tell us what it is?
I do. It's, well, PCTA and for support staff, our PESPA folks, are those organizations represent the entire bargaining unit. So whether you're a union member or not, you're being represented at the bargaining table. So the district is dealing with one entity instead of having to make side deals with 7,200 teachers.
Yeah, and it has kind of a rocky history because I think Florida is one of the few states in the United States that has collective bargaining written into our Constitution itself.
Mm-hmm. We do. Collective bargaining in a right-to-work state is not a given. It was won by folks in 1968, one of the first, I think it was the first teachers strike in the country. Teachers from Florida, they actually didn't just walk off the job, they resigned. They were so incensed by the conditions of in the schools. They were grossly underfunded, pretty much similar to the
I was just going through that. Sounds familiar.
So it wasn't even like, we want this job to be better. They just flat out, we don't want this job at all anymore.
Yeah, for them it was all about making education better for the students.
Right.
They were willing to put their pensions and their jobs on the line to do so. Unfortunately, only 40% of the teachers actually walked off. Because as you know, in a right-to-work state, you don't have to be a member of the union. You know, so they were able to get people to fill in those positions, retired people.
Scabs.
Traitors.
Yeah. That is a word commonly used for people that do cross picket lines.
Right.
But yeah, but still, they stuck it out, and they did win the right to collective bargaining, which was put in our Constitution, in the Florida Constitution. Of course, they also had to put in the Constitution that they would not be allowed to strike. Mm-hmm. So that is not a weapon that teachers can use in the state of Florida without risking their pensions.
But they didn't say you can't still just walk right off the job and quit en masse, right? You can still do that.
You could.
So we're saying the S word a lot, right? I just want to make this very clear. We're saying the S word. I think it's also important to say that many people consider this strike to be a massive failure as well. We did get the collective bargaining strike, but we did not get everything they wanted.
Right.
And what ended up happening was they did write it into law saying, if you were to strike, I mean, Mike, you know more than I do. What happens if we strike in this state?
Yeah, so if you were to strike, you lose your pension. And for a lot of folks that go into a public service, the pension is the one attractor because certainly the pay is not. I would disagree that it was a a failure. I think they didn't win everything that they wanted, but to be in the South and to be in a right-to-work state mm-hmm. and to have collective bargaining, I mean, you can go to Texas, they don't have collective bargaining at all.
They do not.
There's nobody representing them. There's no negotiations. So
but we they do have a lot of Buc-ee's. You can go work there.
Buc-ee's employees do get paid better than teachers.
Yeah, we gotta check. We gotta check the benefits for Whataburger also.
I think actually we're the only state in the South that has collective bargaining in the Constitution. This is a unique thing from Florida.
But one of the things that all the things that they wanted and they didn't get, and some of the circumstances back then, what you're talking about, Mike, kind of reminds me of like a common refrain that I use a lot, and a lot of millennials and now Zoomers like Mr. Aziz, who are also entering the workforce, repeat is, what have we got to lose? Because so many millennials and a lot of us younger teachers entering the workforce, listen, we're not counting on that pension to begin with.
Right.
We can't afford to have, there's no way we are affording a home. We can't afford health insurance. We can't afford kids. I will never buy a house.
That's a guarantee.
We have literally nothing to lose because we haven't gained any. I'm 36. I own nothing. Right. Literally, I could just drop my bags and leave at any point because there's nothing here.
And there's also like the thing that like the respect and this idea of being a teacher. Like my parents tell me all the time, like, don't just stay as a teacher. You got to get your PhD and become a professor. And that's my ultimate goal. But there was a time when teachers were actually respected and that the career was respected. And it's going away. It's disappearing in the U.S. overall.
If it ever existed.
If it ever existed.
Right. Yeah. You tell people you're a teacher now and people are like, oh, I'm so sorry.
And like yourself, Phil, I'm a New Yorker. So, and I was in the Carpenters Local 608.
Okay. Teamsters 814.
Striking, is a powerful weapon. And I like to say that, yes, it's against the law here in Florida. However, if you could organize every single teacher and they all walked out, they would have to hire us back. What would they do? But that's not going to be the problem. The problem is going to be is that, you walk out, but your neighbor doesn't.
Right, exactly.
And that they leave you hanging. And that's basically what we have because a strike would work anywhere if 100% participate in it. But that's not going to happen because I guess teachers just aren't teams.
And that's all before the cost of giant inflatable rat balloons.
And one more thing to add to that, I believe many of the teachers who did resign during that first initial teacher strike, they did not get their jobs back.
Yeah, many did not.
So it was for a good cause.
We've reached a point now where we're like, who wants it?
We have teachers quitting en masse here in Pinellas County. We have over 100 vacancies for teaching positions. It's getting bad.
If you're listening, I can cook a mean brisket. I'm just saying.
And it's about to get worse.
It's about to get really, really bad.
Yes.
It's bad. Really bad.
Current legislation is going to make it, almost impossible to want to stay in the profession.
So collective bargaining, what does this look like, right? What does it look like? If I'm going to be bargaining for my entire union, like, what does that look like for me when I walk into the room?
Well, usually you walk in with a bargaining team.
Okay.
When I walked into bargaining, I was the head of my bargaining team, but I was a social studies teacher, so I could bargain effectively for a social studies teacher, not for a social worker, not for a speech language pathologist, not for an elementary school teacher, because I didn't teach. So I needed people from all different aspects of education to tell me about their day, what would make their lives better, how could they be more effective in teaching students. You pick people that aren't afraid to open their mouths, that will make their arguments and do it intelligently. And number one, they have to have the heart of a teacher. They have to want to do what's best for kids. Because if we end up doing what's best for students, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's going to be what's best for teachers.
Absolutely.
You're listening to PCTA's Fire Podcast. I'm Brendan Pickett here talking about collective bargaining with my best friends, Phil, Ramsey Aziz, and of course, our old president, Mike Gandolfo.
Not that old.
Former president. Previous president.
Emphasis on old. No.
Nice.
You can scratch that best friend thing too. Yeah, right.
And this is not a continuation of our long running Lord of the Rings joke. His name is really Gandalfo.
Well, we decided, I think, that Lee's Gimli,
yeah,
and then he's our Gandalf.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking, does that make you Bilbo Bargains?
Bilbo Bargains. Speaking of Bilbo bargaining, what are the benefits of having union representation, such as PCCA, negotiating for teachers rather than just having district do it for us?
Yeah, well, of course, district is going to do what's best for district. You hope that they want to do what's best for students, but sometimes they need reminding. There's definitely an advantage of having another side there because the administrators aren't in our classrooms. They're just not there. They're not teaching
thankfully
students. So it's easy to make a decision from a desk over at the admin building. But if you're not, and I like to say this to all administrators all the time, teaching happens between a student and a teacher. Everybody else is just supporting cast.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you're the boss, but you're just there to support your teachers. If you do what's right for the teachers, if you do what's right for the kids, you're going to be helping the teachers. We're all here about the learning process and trying to make it as easily digestible for students as possible. And somebody from behind the desk can't do that. It needs somebody that's going to be standing there every day, taking it on the chin and feeling totally exhausted at the end of the day. But get up the next day because they wait for that one moment when they look at a kid and they see that light bulb above their head because they finally got that concept that you've been trying to drill in for the last 3 days. That's what makes teachers get out of bed every day.
Right. Just one small tangent on that, by the way. I mean, I got to remind people, if you're an administrator and you're listening to this podcast right now,
thank you.
We're teammates, you know, like we're on the same team.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're the ones in the front lines. You're the ones supposed to have our backs. Like I hear a lot from members saying like, oh, my administrator is out to get me. I'm like, why?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. That makes no sense. You know, we're supposed to be all working towards the betterment of, you know, these children, of our students and whatnot. So this animosity between teachers and administrators, to me, it's nonsensical.
Right.
You know, we need to do better working with our administrators to ensure that learning is happening inside the classroom. If you're fearful of your administrator, something has gone terribly wrong.
The relationship has completely fallen apart at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, and at that, if you're an administrator listening to this, if you're a school board member listening to this, if you're somebody who goes to school board meetings and are otherwise part of the community and are listening to this, send us an email because we want to talk to you. Like, we want to have these conversations with you on the mic. If you want to do it, that's, again, that's part of being a team. Let's have these conversations.
So you want to have union representation for teachers at the bargaining table. Okay, I get that. Well, what is going to happen, do you think? Like, I want to kind of examine the implications here of teachers not having this relationship anymore. Like, it is constitutionally part of Florida's constitution, obviously, but also, like, what's going to happen? What would district prioritize instead of our salaries? What would happen?
Well, what would happen is they're a large business with a tremendous budget. And so they're going to be fiscally responsible. And one of the first things they're going to do, I think, is try to find ways to cut corners. And one of the biggest things that's on their budget is health insurance. It's every year it goes up every year. You know, we've been lucky that they've been willing to eat it. The increases every year, for the last couple of years, at least, they do not have an infinite amount of funds. We can ask for a ton of money, but we know what the state gives them, you know, so we definitely, it benefits to have people on our side of the bargaining table that know how much money is available. Because if we're not there, then they're going to basically try to save money. And like I said, I think insurance would be one of the first places. And this is not, we know this is going to happen because this similar legislation passed in Wisconsin. And we know what the repercussions were. And one of the first things they did was the money the district pays towards our retirement, they made them pay half of it. They made the teachers pay half of it. That cost them $5,000 in the first year.
Wow.
The next year, they got a high deductible health insurance policy that cost the teachers another $5,000. So within 2 years, they lost, I think, over $11,000 of total compensation because there was nobody there. They could make decisions unilaterally. And so, yeah, it definitely is going to be a painful thing. And here in Pinellas, we have almost $6,000 that comes from our referendum. And the district can't ask for that money. The district can't promote and advertise and say, hey, voters, vote for this. They can't lobby for it because they are the recipients. They can't do that. We do it. We hire the campaign manager. We pay for the billboards. PCTA does that.
Yeah, PCTA.
If we're not there, then that may not pass. And
right.
When you tell people, vote for a tax, most of the times they're going to say no.
It failed in Hillsborough, didn't it?
It did.
I'm thinking of just the, we're going to try to get light rail here in Pinellas County around 2013. Yep. Remember that? No tax for tracks. Right. It failed miserably. And I was miserable a bit about that.
People are still mad that we lost one lane in each direction on First North and South in St. Pete, which both First North and South are like super speedways with no lights on them.
Yep.
Those roads do not need three lanes. And they made one of those three into a bus lane. And people are furious.
How dare you?
Yeah, even though you can still speed down that street.
Like you could still drive down it, but
yeah, occasionally you might see a bus.
Yeah,
it's horrifying.
So let me bring this back for a second. What Mike was talking about was Senate Bill 256 or House Bill 1445, which they're both centered around this idea of limiting union access within our schools. Senate Bill 256 has a 60% threshold for union certification. It has payroll deductions where they're going to get rid of the item in our paychecks, right? So we have to pay in a different way, a third-party way. And then lastly, it's going to limit the access for, well, union literature at our own work sites,
that one
right?
Sucks.
That one really sucks. So basically, it's a kill union bill, if you're thinking of it that way. And when you kill the union, here's the big part, right? You kill collective bargaining.
We also need to make sure that it's very clear that it's killing only the teachers' union. There are a lot of unions that are excluded from this. Well, right.
What they did was they made it public employees. But they took out the firefighters and the police.
Yeah, and not every public employee, I think, knows this also. I would bet
Absolutely
you that
not.
The like sanitation and water works and all that stuff, water resources and all, don't know the full details about this.
And I'd point out that they do carve out the cops and the firemen, but they are also at close to 100% membership.
Right.
Okay, those are not people you mess with because they are at 100% membership. Teachers, they're not.
Yeah,
you know, so we're the low hanging fruit, and that's where they're coming after us.
So, what is the challenge for our membership? How do we? I mean, I know this is like kind of the question that comes up in almost every episode, but how do we drum up our membership to have that type of strength?
Well, the fact that we have 60 that the threshold of 60% is really a bogus thing, because if you were to go to every teacher and ask them, and when you do form a union, you have to get signatures. Mm-hmm. The bargaining unit has to want you there. Okay, so maybe they don't all want to pay, but they all want us there. They all want a contract. They all want somebody representing them at the bargaining table. They don't want to just take the crumbs that are handed to them. They want to know somebody's fighting for them. You know, if he was really trying to pass something that had any merit, he would say, if 60%, less than 60% of the teachers don't want you, and then we could just send out a survey and see who wants it. So, I guarantee you we're probably close to 90% of the teachers would say, yeah, of course I want somebody there. May not want to pay for it, but they want us there.
You listen to PCTA's Fire Podcast. I'm Brennan Pickett here. I'm here with Philip Castro, Ramsey Aziz, and Mike Gandolfo talking about collective bargaining and possible legislation moving through to delete unions from the
select
web.
All delete
select all delete union. I mean, it's kind of incredible because I think about this story all the time. I have a brother-in-law, Alex, if you're listening. He's a funny guy. He's younger too. He's like 22, like Ramsey over here. And I told him, like, man, I really don't like how little I get paid for the amount of work I put in, right? And pay is a common issue of all teachers. And he told me, well, why don't you just ask your boss for a raise?
Mr. DeSantis, can I please have a raise?
First of all, to be clear, our boss is the children. We are public servants. We can't ask the kids for money. We can't put tip jars on our desk, although I've thought about it.
I think that we should do that and see what happens. There's nothing in the contract that we can't do that.
No, the kids would take from the tip jar.
They might.
But I mean, that's what unions are. That's me asking my boss for a raise. Just my union goes and they're asking my boss for a raise, and that's what it is. So I have to pay for that. I think the biggest problem is because our pay is so low, we struggle in membership. That is the biggest thing. If you look at what firefighters make, right?
So
they do well.
One thing that Mike had said earlier that made me think is I'm curious. I don't know where the data exists on this. I'm sure it's somewhere or we can pull it. But you talked about like how the pensions and health insurance and all being huge money sucks for the district, essentially, right? I'm not sure if I'm ever going to retire from this job. So like how many people, like what is the threshold for people who are literally like going to collect that pension? Because I think a lot of us are just not counting on it. And it's been written about many, many places, many, many times that millennials are job hoppers. I myself have job hopped like so many times. And, you know, my average is probably like 3, 4, 5 years at a job. And I just move on to somewhere else that's going to pay me better, offer me better benefits. So how many people are actually relying on this as a career, especially considering none of us can start families, none of us can afford a house to live here.
Right.
So what does the future of this profession in general in Florida and in Pinellas specifically look like if these things like health insurance are not reliable, pensions are not reliable, you know, we're not even able to really save up money. So many of us are paycheck to paycheck to begin with.
I'm paycheck to paycheck right now. I sold my car, got a motorcycle just so I wouldn't have this car payment and I wouldn't have to pay as much in insurance. Like who's expecting this pension? You know, who's actually relying on this pension?
Yeah. Well, there are people.
Mike is.
Yeah. Old guys like me, yes.
Yeah, right. There are people, for sure. But I'm talking about, I mean, it feels like there's going to be some kind of bottoming out. Like soon-ish, because, Ramsey is 22. He's like one of the brand new teachers, right? I'm 36, and I can say like when my parents were 36, even my sister, who's a little bit older than me, when she was 36, a lot. That's like an age where people are well invested in their careers, and they're like, all right, let's put an addition on the house, let's get a new roof, that stuff. I have none roof.
Well, I think we can channel this outrage back to Senate Bill 256 because they're trying to take away the dues payroll deduction on our pay stub, but we have to pay into FRS.
Right.
We have to pay into retirement, but we can't pay into our dues anymore. Like, are you kidding me? Yeah. I have to pay for this thing I'm probably never going to see. And by the way, they love holding that over our heads.
Yeah.
So, like, I have to pay for this thing that I might not even see. And then on top of that, I can't have my dues taken out of there now. So I have to find, like, some new magical way to make sure I have representation. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather not pay for my own retirement, get that little bit of cash now, and then pay for the dues, because I feel like the dues are going to be more worthwhile, and I feel it's going to be more helpful, at least for me, because I'm a young teacher who I'm not ever expecting to see this pension or a retirement in my life. And I'm sure other people like Philip, like Brennan, you're not expecting this either, you know.
Well, I still want it.
You want it.
Yeah. Let me make that very clear.
No. Obviously, we want it.
And you guys may not be getting the pension. You're still getting money towards retirement. It's just in a separate fund. It's IRAs. That what they give you guys now?
Yeah.
You have an option. You can go into the pension or you can go into this retirement account.
And then what
happens? And you can take it with you. So you'll be able to take it with you if you decide to. I'm hoping that you guys don't, because I know you guys are all great teachers. I want you to hang around here. Yeah. And I think that's a big problem. And I think it's a legislative conspiracy to make this atmosphere so toxic that you guys are thinking about leaving and we're losing our best and our brightest. That's not what public education is all about. This should be a career that you're going to be compensated well, that you're going to expect a nice pension when you're done doing your time, and that you actually enjoy doing it every day. And I'm just sorry that that's not the case. But, you can see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
This, just like we were talking about the district, their health insurance is one of their biggest parts of their budget. Education is one of the biggest parts of the budget in the state. And so the state would love to cut that out, just give everybody $8,000 a year and say, you know what, no one's ever going to ask me for more money, because now we're going to throw it into the free market economy and it'll never go up before. Every year they're not going to have to add more and more and more, because all the charter schools will just undercut each other and try to do it for less. And that's what's going to happen. And so public schools will deteriorate. Public schools will become a thing of the past. You know, will be the place that only those students that these other organizations don't want anymore, the ones that are too hard to teach, the ESOL, the ESE kids, that's what will be left in public education. And so it's really a sad situation. We're really, this state they're on the wrong path.
And I mean, you and I talked about this before the show. I mean, I told you, like, I kind of like this gig, you know, I kind of like teaching. Yeah. I do. And if and when I do leave this place, I will be teaching somewhere else. That's how I feel. And I've been looking at other places, and I want to stay a teacher. I just don't know if it's going to be in Florida anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I feel. And it is a shame. And I feel the sentiment, and like, I want to stay. I'm from here. I'm from St. Pete. Like, yeah. I want to stay here. But at the same time, if I'm not going to be able to raise a family and actually buy a home and live like my parents, you know, who got to buy a home and start a family, like, I don't want to be a part of that. But I think we're going to end here. And when we get back, we're going to do our BASED awards. So stick around, guys.
Hey guys, it's Brennan. One of my goals moving into this podcast project was to have the voices of our listeners play an active role in sharing our message that Union's Public Schools, well, they're not going anywhere without a fight. And as we dive deeper into the themes of public education, teachers' unions, and political activism, we want to hear from you, our listeners. If you're a teacher, parent, even a member of the community, we extend an open invitation for you to send us a voice recording with your name, occupation, and why you're sticking with the union during these politically turbulent times. We love to play these recordings at the beginning of our episodes and share your thoughts with our listeners. You can send these recordings to PCTAFIRE, that's FYRE, pod at gmail.com. Additionally, we encourage you to write to your representative and advocate for teachers' unions and public education. You can easily locate your representative by visiting myfloridahouse.gov/findyourrepresentative. Your voice can make a difference in supporting education and the future of our students. So take a moment to send us a voice clip and write to your representative. Let's work together to positively impact education for all.
And we're back. So we're going to do our quick little BASED Award segment since Rams is here, and I love having him talk. Can you tell us what the BASED Award is there, bud?
All right. Well, the BASED Awards is basically something can be either agreeable, you know, that's pretty BASED, or respectable, that's pretty BASED. You know, it's a multi-tool, it's meaningless, it's for fun, you know? I think I'll do my BASED Award first. At St. Pete High, our wonderful, wonderful theater director, does everything, school mom, Miss B, hosted the Gold Fever, which is a tradition. I didn't really know what it was because I'm new and this is my first year at the school. You know, I went to go and give her break a leg or whatever, give her good luck for the show. And she told me, oh, you're going to dance for the show. I had no idea. She apparently had sent me an email at 8 o'clock the night before and to a bunch of other people. But then I went to, just tell her good luck. And she said, you're dancing. So I went to the thing, watched some of the students perform, and they were phenomenal. Me, Mr. Benton, and some of our administrators also got on a golf cart, drove up onto the stage, and we're dancing, and it's really funny, and the music didn't play, and nobody danced in a proper way. I did a spin, a bunch of my students were there, and there's a funny video of all of this happening. So,
and that's why I tell her no every single year. Kia, if you're listening, this is why I say no.
No, this is why I will say yes every single year, because it was a lot of fun, and it was just hilarious, it was silly. I had good conversations with everybody who was participating in it. And I did it for the kids, and a lot of my freshmen were there. They got super excited seeing me there. They don't get excited when I'm in class trying to teach, but they got excited seeing me outside of class. And
of course,
a lot of my you know, older kids as well. They saw me and they were making fun of me in class the following day, but it was great. And it was extremely based.
All right. Very cool. My based award is in relation to my ongoing quest to join the Space Force, personal trainer, Ramzi Aziz. We were in the gym. Was this last night or the night before?
Last night.
This was last night. One of the requirements for the military is you have to run a mile and a half in like 11 minutes.
Something like that. 11 and a half minutes.
And I, last night, got my very best mile run, I think, since high school. Might have beat that old time. The reason I don't know the exact time is because I was so excited I hit the emergency stop button by accident. It was almost threw me off the treadmill.
It's approximately, if I remember correctly, like 7 minutes and 36 seconds.
Yeah, I think it was like 7:46 or something.
Somewhere around there.
So I got my mile run down to under 8 minutes. And the last time, I may have mentioned this on the podcast already, the last time it was like 11 minutes, 11 and a half or something.
Yeah, it was something like
so
that.
So it's a pretty significant change for me. And you can't see me. You can only hear my voice, but I'm not like a slim guy. I'm not really that slender. So for me to run at all, I mean, my knees are popping. I got some jello jiggling. It is not beautiful.
He also did an 8-mile run with me one time with one of our school counselors.
That was crazy.
It was absolutely crazy.
I did very little running, I promise you.
we were running in the front, me and the counselor.
It was an extended pity party, and they had to come back and get me several times.
They did laps.
Yeah, they did laps around me. It was like a road runner and Wile E. Coyote. Ridiculous.
But I'm extremely proud of Philip. He's doing great in the gym.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
He's going to make it to 5 minutes. I guarantee it. I'm going to make it happen.
I believe that. I trust you. You're a good trainer.
My base award is pretty, I don't know, I guess it's kind of a brag, but we're breaking records on this podcast. Our last episode, which was the school board episode approaching iRoll status, hit our most listens recently out of all of our episodes, and it's already been passing our previous episodes. It's been a good time. And I mean, we can tell the listeners, I'm here with Creative Loafing right now. They're in the room with us. And then we also have an interview coming out with Carrie Sheridan next week.
With NPR.
So that's on Monday, coming out on Monday, right?
I'm very proud of the work we're doing. I'm very proud of every people that sits in this room with me. I'm very proud of everything we're doing. And hopefully we can get fired from this, right?
Well, thank you. And shout out to Brennan's wife, Emily, for this being kind of her idea. So.
Yes, we love Mrs. De La Paz. Right. Mike?
I'd have to say that just being here with three young unionists who are young enough to be my sons is probably as good as it gets. I do appreciate this opportunity, and I love the work you guys are doing. I think you guys are definitely aces in my book. And if you need me anytime, anywhere, just pick up the phone and I'll be there.
And Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
This is big for me because, like, you were my president when I first started. So this is good stuff. Thank you again. And thank you for listening to the Peace Days Fire podcast. As always, I'm Brennan.
I'm Philip.
I'm Ramsey.
And I'm Mike.
Thank you. Have a good night, guys.
Peace.
Hey everyone, we would like to remind our listeners about important school board meetings taking place on March 21st and April 11th at 10 a.m., as well as a 5 p.m. meeting on April 25th. Remember, it's vital for teachers, parents, and community members to attend these meetings and advocate for public education. Your voice and presence can play a significant role in shaping the future of education and improving the lives of students in our community. We want to give a special thank you to Philip Bel Castro for providing our theme music, and Artifact for adding some great tracks into our intermissions. If you haven't already, be sure to check out Artifact's music at artifactjoints.bandcamp.com. We also want to express our gratitude to Radio St. Pete for airing our podcast, Jamie Beck, Brian Balton, Carla Correa, and Nancy Filardi, as well as all of our supporters in the education community. Your support and dedication has been instrumental to getting the word out and reaching new listeners. Well, that's all for today. I'm Brennan Pickett. You guys have a great day.